Good morning. This is not Nick Reed. This is Eric Burleson, your state senator from rural Greene County and Christian, and I am honored to step in for the huge shoes that he has, the Nick Reed. I can't call him the great one. That was almost kind of copywritten by.
I mean, he could be like the great one of the Ozarks.
Yeah, the Ozarks, industrious, the exceptional Nick Reed. So he is not fired. He is still employed here. He is just enjoying vacation. And so with me today, I've asked my friend Jared Taylor to join me, State Representative Jared Taylor. And so, but first, before we get started with conversation with him, we are starting with the news.
And your first alert forecast, we have a heat advisory for areas along and north of I-44 from 1 to 9 today. Heat index up to 109 degrees in some spots. Today, sunny and hot with a high near 92. Tonight, mostly clear with a low near 73. Wednesday, sunny and hot with a high near 95, but feeling like 105. And Thursday, sunny and hot with a high near 96. Currently in Springfield, it is clear and 73.
Now, sir, I think I realize why Nick took vacation at this time of the year.
Why is that?
Because there's almost nothing going on in the news.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
It is like, it's like dead. There's a lot of repeats, stories that have been going on, lingering for a while, right? So we still have Maricopa County still auditing in Arizona. Mm-hmm. We've got this ongoing fight between McCarthy and Liz Cheney. That's been going on for a few weeks, which is fun. But man, it is
Joe
dead.
Biden gaffes. Those
are continuous. More Joe Biden gaffes, right? More Hunter Biden doing stupid things, right?
That we got the Olympics, though.
We do have the Olympics. We had Shark Week. I realized Shark Week is in the middle of the summer for a reason, because there's usually nothing going on in the summer. So it's Shark Week, right? I think that's why they plan it that way.
Yeah, probably. They look at their programming and thought, you know what? We have got nothing else going on. Let's see if we can draw people in to watch Shark Week.
And but the Olympics, right, sir? Mm-hmm. You said you're not really a watcher of the Olympics.
Yeah, you know, growing up, like that was like a thing in our family. We would all gather around the TV and watch it. And this year, just not so much. I've watched bits and pieces of it, but not like I used to.
And you're not a fan?
Oh, no, we enjoy watching. So we were over at my parents' house this weekend. They live in Hannibal.
So for you, it's like a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, they like to watch. And so we don't have cable or anything. And so we watch while we were over there. But now that we come home, it's, you know, we're blackout again. We can't see anything.
So I'll admit, growing up, for me, the Olympics was an annoyance, right? As a kid, when you're growing up and you're watching it, you're thinking, I can't watch Seinfeld. Like, when will this thing be over, right? Or when is this thing going to end so I can watch Friends again?
Right. Yeah, there's like a three-week hiatus of your favorite TV shows or whatever.
Yeah. But, and the same thing, so my wife, she loves it. And because she loves it, I love it. So, I've actually, you know, spending these years with my wife, I've actually become a little bit more familiar and actually enjoy watching things that I didn't whenever I was a kid. Like when I was a kid, I hated the Macy's Day Parade. It wasn't a thing for me. It was kind of annoying. But now I watch it. I'm like, oh, that, you know, you get caught up into it year after year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I like the Olympics because I don't know. I get a sense of patriotism. Like I really do. Like I enjoy watching it, except for whenever I watch people like Rapinoe who kneel like that. That makes me mad. But
absolutely.
But I do really enjoy like the stories of that. That 19-year-old swimmer from Alaska.
17-year-old.
Oh, 17-year-old who won, and like her hometown was like going crazy watching. I mean, that was really cool. That was so exciting to watch.
It was.
But things like that, you know, make me excited. Like, I mean, you can tell that they love their country. They, mm-hmm. you know, have such a respect for it. And
the fencer, the girl who I don't remember her name, but that was fun to watch as well.
Yeah.
So I thought we could talk a little bit about firearms because you and I have been tag teaming these last, 3 years when it comes to firearms laws and trying to get, trying to move Missouri in a really great direction and get things done in this state. And so that's one of the things that I'd like to talk about when we come back from this first break. And so if you'll join me today, we're going to be talking about firearms. We're going to be talking about philosophy of government. And then we're going to talk not only with you, but later on this morning, we're going to be talking with Representative Bishop Davis, as well as someone that people may not have heard from quite some time, and that is former Senator Norma Champion. And so we'll come back after this break and we'll talk about firearms. This is Eric Burleson filling in for the illustrious Nick Reed, who is on vacation. I have with me Representative Jared Taylor. And first, I don't think we've had an opportunity to introduce you to the listeners. So tell us a little bit about Representative Jared Taylor.
Well, I in the Missouri legislature, I represent the people of the 139th District, which is the western half of Christian County. I've been there for 7 years. This is my last term. We're term limited at 8 years, and so I've got one more session left in me, and then I got to figure out what I'm going to do next.
Then you're a free man.
Yeah, that's right.
So how does that feel? I knew how it felt for me to be in that last year. How does it feel for you?
You know, I just can't believe it's gone this fast. I've really enjoyed my time. It's been very frustrating at times, as you know, but I've enjoyed my time in the legislature working for the people of Missouri and trying to make us a better state, a more conservative state, trying to push us in a less government, less restrictions, let people make decisions on their own. I think people are best left to themselves.
Now I can say this because I'm older than you. You're a fairly young guy, so you've got a lot of runway left, right? So, but tell people before you became a state rep, what did you do prior to that, and where did you grow up originally?
Yeah, so I grew up part of my life in Kansas City, part of my life in Hannibal. My dad's a youth minister. My dad actually just retired. I told you all that I was in Hannibal last weekend, so we went to his retirement ceremony, and that hit me really, hard, because I grew up in that church. I grew up there. He was there for 22 years.
That would have been hard to have your dad as the youth minister because you can't be ornery.
Oh, I'm still ornery, sure. Yeah. But my mom and dad were both there when it happened, so they were able to smack me upside the head.
So let me ask this. Did your dad take you toilet papering? Because my youth pastors always took me toilet papering.
Oh, man. We toilet papered and forked so many yards. It was awesome.
Really?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Grew up in Hannibal. I went to Hannibal LaGrange University, graduated with a criminal justice degree, moved down to the Springfield area as soon as I graduated college, and then worked in retail management. So I worked for Lowe's, Bass Pro. That's actually what got me to the area was I started working for Bass Pro when they opened the new store down at the Landing.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so that's what actually brought me to this area, and I've been here since.
And then you worked for Congressman Long.
I did. I worked for Congressman Billy Long. I was a field representative for him, and then I also worked on the campaign as well.
And how did that connection happen? How did you get connected to – how did you go from working Bass Pro into politics?
So I was, like I said, retail management, really wanted to do something different. We were starting to have kids, kind of wanted to be home on the weekends. I knew the district director, Royce Redding, a really good friend of mine. We actually went to church together, and he knew that I was looking for something different. And I had been involved in politics. I always thought I'd, kind of one day really wanted to get involved and run for office. And so this was a good opportunity in the area to meet more people and to get more involved. And that's the rest is history.
So then I remember you because you came in as that, freshman who you came in, you had all this energy and excitement and enthusiasm. And I was in my last couple of years and I basically didn't trust anybody by then. Are you at that point? You're a little less trusting than
I would definitely agree with that. There are very few in the House that I trust. There are very few that I go to. you were one of my mentors. I mean, you were one of the guys that I would look to for guidance and for help. And
I totally failed you.
Try to understand how why you were voting the way you were voting on, different issues. And we vote, very similarly in the legislature. We always have. And so, you were one of the people that I was able to look to and one of the ones that I trusted. And like you said, I mean, there are so few that you can really, your inner cabinet, your inner friends that you really can trust up there. And it's crazy when you do go up there and you have this wide-eyed, view of the world. And then, you realize how difficult it is to get stuff done. And yeah.
Yeah. And the bill that we're going to talk about this next segment is the one that we worked very hard to get done. But so before we get to that, so tell me, over these last 4 years, what are you going to remember? What are the things that you're going to look back on and reflect on?
I built some really good relationships. Relationships is definitely, that. But then just the legislation. I've realized my time in the legislature when I first started up there is, I'm going to get, so much done. I'm going to pass so much legislation and that was what I thought. And then I soon realized that it wasn't necessarily the legislation that I was going to pass. It was the legislation that I was going to stop from passing, that I was going to prevent from getting done. Because a lot of people have R next to their name, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're conservative, and that doesn't necessarily, mean that they believe in small government. And so I realized quickly that
there's a lot of bad stuff.
There's a lot of bad stuff.
And my thought, there was somebody said to me, and it stuck with me, was that Missouri's been around for nearly 200 years. In fact, in a few weeks, it'll be the 200th birthday. If we were able to survive that long, then maybe we don't need your bill.
That's right.
So yeah, to that point, and so I know you created the Conservative Caucus, or you were part of the Conservative Caucus.
I was. Yeah, you created it.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And I came in, I think, the year after you all had created it, you and Rick Bratton, and there was a couple others.
And Paul Kirtman.
Yeah, Paul Kirtman. And I came in the year after you guys had created it and really started getting involved.
You were the chairman.
And I'm the current chairman. I've been the chairman for the last 2-3 years, I guess, now. And just kind of moving that conservative movement, pushing that conservative movement, and really banding those conservatives together move that.
And being a little bit of a thorn in leadership's side, but keeping them pure is the goal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Wanting to work with them, wanting to make legislation better. I realize that, and one of the things you have to realize when you go up there is you can't die on every hill. You can't put yourself out there on every single issue, but if you can make a bill better, that's the ultimate goal, is to make sure that we're passing good legislation, and working with leadership to pass good legislation.
Well, and speaking of that, and that's a good stopping point, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about great legislation, and that is the Second Amendment Preservation Act. You're listening to 104.1. This is the Nick Reed Show, Springfield's News Talk. Welcome back. This is Eric Burleson. You're listening to Springfield's Talk 104.1. This isn't Nick Reed, but he is on vacation. And with me is Representative Jared Taylor. And we were just getting into the discussion about great legislation that has recently passed. For those of you that have been paying attention, what is called SAPA, or SAPA, the Second Amendment Preservation Act, was a bill that was sponsored by Representative Taylor, House Bill 85. Tell us about the history of the Second Amendment Preservation Act.
Yeah, so back in 2013, 2014, a couple guys got together and wrote this amazing legislation to push back on the federal government. It's kind of I'm losing my words here. It's a guideline of how we can push back against federal government, utilizing what's called the anti-commandeering doctrine. But they wrote this legislation 2013, 2014. It was actually
Written by Dave Rowland.
Yeah, that's right, Dave Rowland, constitutional scholar. One of the brightest minds that we have of the state. And just a phenomenal guy, just a really good.
Now, is he from Hannibal? Isn't he from up north?
Mexico.
From Mexico, yeah. Missouri. Okay.
That's right. And so you know, they wrote this for the Second Amendment, but in a way that they could apply it to other other topics in Missouri to kind of push back against the federal government. It passed the legislature in 2013. Governor Nixon then at the time vetoed it. And they missed the override in the Senate by one vote.
Yeah, the bill sponsor at that time in the House was Representative Doug Funderburk. Mm-hmm. And his office was next to mine. I was a co-sponsor. And I distinctly remember how difficult passing that bill was.
Yeah, it was a huge fight. And then for the override, I mean, missing it by one vote is... I mean, people don't understand how big of a deal that is.
Yeah, what happened is, just in short, really what happened is the House did their job, mm-hmm. and then it went over to the Senate, and Senate leadership basically flipped.
Yeah.
They decided to not pass it. They couldn't let it pass. And so they changed their votes to both the floor leader of the Senate and the president of the Senate switched their votes, which caused the bill to fail.
Yeah, and so they said, we'll bring it back up in 2014, which they did, but they just played around with it too long, and then
at that point, leadership wasn't going to let it move forward.
Right.
You know,
right.
If they were going to vote against it the year before, they're not going to let it move forward. So they don't. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize is that once somebody's in leadership, they can do a lot of things to kill a bill without having to take a vote.
Yeah, there's 1,000 ways to kill a bill in Jeff City.
And that's what, so then we kind of took a hiatus for that bill, mm-hmm. and that's when we passed constitutional carry,
right.
and other things. We could talk about those later, yep. but then it came back into popularity, really, because we have a new president that came in, and you started carrying it in the House.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and it really didn't have anything to do, in my opinion, with necessarily the president, because I filed it whenever Trump was president, and he still had 2 years left. So it wasn't something, and, you know, I still to this day, I don't think it mattered, in my opinion, who was president. But the narrative around the Second Amendment and what the Democrats have been trying to do for decades. Well, I mean, since the 90s, look at the AR-15 ban back in the 90s. And so you and I filed the legislation. We started talking it up, you know, and you really have to educate people. People don't understand, you know, legislation now, the first year or second year, really.
Were you carrying it prior to 20?
So I think I carried it 1 year prior to you coming back into the Senate.
Okay.
And then when you came back into the Senate, that's when you picked it back up as well.
Yeah.
Because nobody else had filed it, I don't think. I was the only one that had filed it, I think, in the first year that I brought it back up. And then when you came, luckily we had a Senate sponsor who was strong on the issue and knew the issue. And it was awesome
because
you've been in the fight for so long. I mean, you remember it when it was in 2013, 2014. So it was great to have that institutional knowledge. And that's what a lot of people don't have, you know, especially due to the term limits, is that institutional knowledge.
Wow, this time went too fast. So we're going to have to pick up how we got it done. When we come back from this break, you're listening to Springfield's Talk 104.1. This is the Nick Reed Show with Eric Burleson filling in. Welcome back to Springfield's 104.1. This is the Nick Reed Show. I am Eric Burleson, and here is the weather.
Well, your first alert forecast, we do have a heat advisory for areas along and north of I-44 from 1 to 9 today. Heat index values could be up to 109 in some spots. Today, it's going to be sunny and hot with a high near 92. Tonight, mostly clear with a low near 73. Wednesday, sunny and hot with a high near 95, but feeling like 105. And Thursday, sunny and hot with a high near 96. Currently in Springfield, it is sunny and 72.
So with me is Representative Jared Taylor, who is in his lion in winter stage as a state representative. But in his last 2 years, he was able to pass what I think I would say is a crowning achievement for any legislator.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, I mean, I've told people this all along. This is the biggest bill that I could ever, you know, pass with the help of so many people, including you. And I mean, it was such a monumental year. And I think the reason we got it done, and we were kind of talking about, you know, the presidential and you know, that's kind of the reason why I think it was able to get done this year, was because we have a president now who says, yeah, we're coming for your AR-15s. You don't need 30-round magazines.
Yeah.
You know, and we've got a legislature in D.C., a House and a Senate, who has a bill that, I mean, does literally everything that, you know, oh, we don't want to take your guns. Well, that's what this bill does. You know, we like the Second Amendment. We want to protect it. No, you're doing everything opposite of that in this legislation, and the president supports it. This was a perfect opportunity, a perfect storm for us to get this bill done.
It underscored what we were talking about. So the first 2 years you and I were sponsoring it was we were saying this is what might happen.
Yeah.
And then this year Biden stepped in and fulfilled everything we were telling people would likely happen.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. You know, we constantly hear you know, this attack on the Second Amendment, and we saw that coming, and that was the reason why we originally it started to back up again. But now the threat is real. I mean, the threat is on us. Mm-hmm. They want to restrict Second Amendment rights. That is their goal. It is now out in the open. Like I said, they you know, continuously said, oh, well, we don't want to do that. Well, now their intentions are known. Now we know that that's exactly what they want to do.
Yeah, and you know, okay, we were talking off air about this, but working with leadership is so tough because, you know, summer caucus, you're in the House, you always have these meetings during the interim, and you have leadership, they'll be rah, rah, we're going to pass all this red meat stuff mm-hmm. before session starts. And they do that while they're raising money from their own members. Mm-hmm. Okay. But then when you come in at the beginning of the year, leadership does everything they can, and they use every instrument they can to try to hide bills, to basically keep them from progressing by slowing them down or not sending them to committee at all, sending them to the wrong committee.
Right.
And that's what they did to legislation like this year after year after year until this year. So what do you think was the difference?
I think there was two things. I think we had the support of the speaker this year, Rob Vescovo. He made it a priority. He said all along that this was a priority of his. He made that publicly
known.
That's
true. And he made it known the year prior.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
As we were exiting that previous year,
yep.
and he was coming in from being the floor leader,
right.
he made it clear to the Senate leadership
yep.
that it was a priority.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, even in negotiations last year when we were working on it, he told Senate leadership and other senators that this was going to be a priority for him. So that's why we were able to get it done. The other reason, though, is because we had grassroots. If it weren't for the grassroots, if it weren't for organizations like Missouri Firearms Coalition and MRA.
For those people that don't know, the MRA is the Missouri Republican Assembly.
Yeah, and we have a great MRA group in not only in Christian County, but in the 7th District that, you know, people should get involved with.
Yeah, quick plug is if you want to really do something, get involved and start helping the conservative movement, look up the Missouri Republican Assembly on Facebook and reach out, send a message, try to join.
Yep. And if it weren't for groups like that, if it weren't for them coming up to the Capitol daily and knocking on doors and pushing people not only to co-sponsor, but to vote in favor
they really
of it, to
did.
Push leadership,
yeah.
That's what passed this bill. It wasn't me. It wasn't you. It wasn't anybody else. It was the grassroots. It was people calling, knocking on doors. That's how we were able to get this done.
And I was overwhelmed. What was funny, it was like a hot potato. Everywhere the bill went, whoever was in possession of it wanted to get rid of it as quickly as possible and mm-hmm. move it on to the next stage because the Missouri Firearms Coalition and other groups, they realized if we don't start emailing and phone calling and lighting that chairman and those committee members up, they're just going to sit on this bill because they learned from previous years that was happening.
Right.
So that's how they got it moved along and they couldn't avoid it. Eventually Senate leadership, even who have done some very moderate things over the last few years.
Yeah.
They came to the conclusion we have to pass this bill.
Right.
Otherwise our reputations are ruined.
Now, Senate leadership, that was where our hiccup was, though, this year. I mean, that's they held on to it for quite a while, and they used it as leverage.
They held on to my bill for a long time, for most of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
And then once your bill even got over, they held on to it for a long time.
Yeah, we passed it back in February in the House and sent it over to the Senate, and Senate leadership held on to it and delayed it and continually delayed it, didn't bring it up. And finally, I think it was the last week of session is when we were finally able to get it done over in the Senate. And then when it came back over to the House, we were able to pick it up and pass it.
So we're going to take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk about how this bill dovetails into what I think has made Missouri the national leader when it comes to firearms issues. And we'll talk about other bills that we have passed, including constitutional carry, and then where we're going next. What's the next things that we need to accomplish in Missouri? You're listening to Springfield's 104.1. This is the Nick Reed Show with Eric Burleson filling in. Welcome back. This is Eric Burleson filling in for the fantastic Nick Reed on Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm with Jared Taylor, and we've been talking firearms and Missouri's fantastic firearms legislation. So we just passed the Second Amendment Preservation Act, trumping every state in the union. No other states have this. Nothing as good as Missouri.
Right.
And so it's one of the pieces that we've put in place to make Missouri really a sanctuary state for firearms.
Yeah. You know, other states are starting to look at what we did. This is a roadmap again of what other states can do to protect Second Amendment rights. Other states are passing similar, but they're passing, SEPA light versions, if you will. There's no enforcement mechanism like we included in ours, or they're leaving it up to interpretation like, well, you can still do some of these things, or you can still work with, the feds on some things. In Missouri, we have the strongest Second Amendment protections bill in the entire country, and other states are looking at us saying, look, they can do it. Here's how they did it. This is what we need to do. And the more states that pass this, the more states do what we've done, the stronger our bill is going to be.
Representative, I think it's a jobs bill. And the reason I say that is that I visited an amazing store just recently called Mountainside Outfitters, and I'm not trying to do a plug or an ad here. I went there because I was having lunch in Rogersville with some community leaders, and they said, if you haven't been to the store, how do you not know about the store? It's amazing. So I followed the billboards on 60 on James River and found this store, and it is fantastic. And I had a conversation with the owner, and he said that the reason why he moved to Missouri is because Missouri's firearm laws are the best in the country. And so he didn't know who he was talking to, but I felt so much joy to hear that.
Yeah.
Being someone who's carried a lot of the firearms legislation.
Yeah. Other states are jealous of what we've done. I mean, I can't tell you the countless number of people that have contacted me from out of state saying, man, I wish we could get that done here, or, please contact my senator, or my representative to tell them how you did it. I'm like, I don't know if I could, I don't feel comfortable doing that. But I mean, the number of people that have told me, like, you've got to do this in our state as well. It's pretty awesome.
Well, it is awesome. I was at a conference in D.C. listening with other lawmakers from around the country. And whenever they were standing up to say, what are you doing in your state? What's the bills that you're working on? Again and again and again, guess what bill they were all working on? It was constitutional carry.
Mm-hmm.
So now that's something that we got passed whenever my last year in the last hour of being a state representative, and you were there.
I was.
But that constitutional carry, by passing that and making sure that, you don't have to get permission from government to how you're going to carry a firearm.
Right.
If you already have the right to own the firearm, to buy it, to carry it, why do you need training just to put clothing over that firearm?
Yeah, that was why the do you premise. Have to pay the government in order to exercise that right? Why do you have to ask permission? I mean, we were giving our sheriffs the ability to say, no, you can't utilize a constitutional right. And by implementing constitutional carry, we took that power away from government and gave it back to the people.
Yeah, and some people don't know that there was a lot more in that bill than constitutional carry. We created stand your ground, which is basically castle doctrine outside of the home.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to prove to the prosecutor or anyone that you exhausted every effort of fleeing the scene before you used lethal force to defend yourself.
Right. Right. Yeah, we had the duty to retreat rather right, than being able to stand your ground, you know, to stop that threat. You were supposed to run and flee from that before you could use, you know, justified deadly force.
So we were able to get that done. We got a lifetime concealed carry permit added to the statutes. Now, it's not recognized by other states, but at least if you want to be in Missouri and not have to worry about going and renewing again and again and again, mm-hmm. then you could pay for a lifetime permit. Now, they wanted more money for that, but...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But at least we were able to get that done. We also got in there permits for veterans,
mm-hmm.
so they could be able to get their permits without having to go and get retrained.
Right.
So there was quite a bit in that bill that we got passed, and it was so awesome whenever you see other states who are trying to catch up to Missouri.
Yeah.
When we're leading the way. When we come back, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we need to talk about where Missouri needs to go next, what things we have to do to continue to shore up our firearms legislation, our Second Amendment rights in Missouri. You're listening to Springfield's Talk 104.1. This is Eric Burleson filling in for the great Nick Reed. This is Springfield's Talk 104.1. This is Eric Burleson filling in for the superlative Nick Reed. I'm with Jared Taylor, and we are talking firearms and our Second Amendment rights. We've been talking about the SEPA law. We'll probably talk about that a little bit more whenever we have our next guest, Bishop Davidson, come in. But let's talk about what Missouri needs to do next. So first off is our gun-free zones.
Yeah, we've been working on that bill for 6 years. I mean, I've been working on it with you for the last 6 years because there are 17 listed locations in Missouri statute where you can't carry a firearm. Some of those make sense. You can't carry it into a prison. You can't
an
carry
airport.
An airport, right? That's federal, but we have it listed in statute. But some of them don't. Some of them are private property. We should leave it up to private property owners to make that decision. It shouldn't be the government's decision what happens on
agreed.
Private property.
Totally agreed. And I agree because I'm the Senate sponsor.
Yes.
And so we've been trying to do this for years, and it is so difficult to get past the industrial, you know, the lobby machine, especially when people, what I don't think many people realize is that your tax money is paying for lobbyists that come up and lobby against this.
Yeah. And we're not talking about just gun issues. We have lobbyists that are paid millions throughout our state that our local municipalities, our colleges and universities, our cities pay for in order to come lobby us in Jeff City.
To take away their rights.
To take away their rights, to restrict their rights. It's crazy. That is an issue that I am passionate about, that we have got to get rid of those lobbyists.
So if you have any, if you want to get stuff done, obviously elect people at the state level, but do not forget to elect the right people at the local level and give them the backbone and the encouragement to do what's right and to stop the payment of these lobbyists from coming up and taking away Second Amendment rights, right?
Yep, that's right.
Whether it's from the university who's sending up a lobbyist or from the city, it's happening, folks.
Yep.
The other issue we need to address came up because of the event that happened in St. Louis with Mark McCloskey and is now who was being prosecuted by Kim Gardner.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we're going, you know, I think where we're looking down the road. That's what we need to work on next is making the Stand Your Ground law better because we realize there are some holes in it. There are some issues that we have within Stand Your Ground that we needed to do to make it better, like providing criminal immunity if someone is never or if their justifiable force is used, or provide civil immunity if they've never been charged or convicted of a criminal violation.
Yeah, because folks, you know, you are not, if you look at this, Mark McCloskey, he's an attorney, he's wealthy, he was in the national spotlight, there was cameras everywhere, so it's not like there's confusion.
Right.
And he still, I mean, it's very clear he was using the law correctly and accurately. And now he still is being prosecuted and is going to have to go to court and pay all of these fees. And the guy had to give up his firearm. He shouldn't have had to give up anything. Now, if there's one thing that frustrated me, I wish he would have gone all the way.
Right.
I wish he would have dug in his heels and made him go to the court, go to trial.
Yeah.
But you know what? In he may have calculated it correctly. In St. Louis, he may have not done well in a trial, in a real jury trial.
Yeah.
So, but that's the problem, is that if a guy like him can't really...
if they can't utilize the law like, you know, the way we intended or the way that it's written, then we need to fix the law.
We've got to strengthen it so that you have these activist prosecutors cannot use it to go after law-abiding citizens. It's crazy.
Yeah, we've got these prosecutors in D.C. that aren't willing. Did you see that Kim Gardner in D.C. has charges, the judge dropped charges, murder charges, because the prosecutor's office failed to do their job. So we've got her that's failing to do her job on murder charges, but is going after a law-abiding gun owner in the city of St. Louis who was protecting himself and his family, who has was justified. So she's letting murderers and drug dealers go and prosecuting gun owners. That's a problem. That's what we're facing, and that's why we got to get this fixed.
Yes. Yeah, so folks, and this is, I guess, the first that you're hearing of this, is that we're basically dropping an announcement that Representative Taylor and myself, Senator Burleson, are working on new language that no one has seen yet to shore up and really strengthen it so that you don't become the next Mark McCloskey, that you don't end up being taken to court simply for using your rights. So these people stepped out of their balcony with a firearm when they had a mob of people who were armed.
And threatening them.
And threatening them, threatening to rape his family.
Yep. Burn his house down.
Burn his house down.
With his family inside.
Yeah. What would you do? People bust through your iron gate, right? Break an iron gate.
It's not your private property.
Right.
Yep.
And so at the end of the day, if this is going to happen, we need to be able to have people know that the law is going to be there to protect them in those circumstances.
Right.
Now, we're crafting it so that we're not creating an environment where a person is just now has the authority or the ability to use force whenever they want to.
Right.
When they're not being threatened.
Right.
And that's what we're crafting, but you're hearing it for the first time ever. Representative Taylor and I are going to be dropping brand new legislation in this year to protect your rights. With that, we'll take a break. You're listening to Springfield's Talk 104.1, Nick Reed Show, with Eric Burleson filling in.